Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Bob Mackowitz. Bob, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Matthew. How's the audio on your side? You're coming in a little fuzzy on mine.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's okay for me as long as it's okay for everyone listening.
I would have no idea until people are listening. I've turned down I potted myself down a little bit. I don't know if that does any good.
Okay, well, let's just see how it goes. Yeah. And we're in two different locations. I am also up north now.
Oh, I'm in the city. You're a... Where, oh, really? Are you cottaging?
Well, I don't know. Sure. I'm up north because, to be perfectly frank, there's no really good reason to be in the city right now if you don't have to be. And I understand. But you know what? We're burying the lead. What did you do this morning, Matt?
I got my AstraZeneca. I should probably know how to pronounce it, but I don't. I got vaccinated at the Shoppers Drug Mart near St. Lawrence Market today.
You're such a beauty. You don't know the name of the vaccine that you got?
It's like AstraZeneca. It's not one. It's AstraZeneca. That's how it's pronounced.
Zeneca with a Z.
Ah, damn it. AstraZeneca. I mean, like, it's not my fault. I would have won. That's the only reason why I wanted Johnson & Johnson. I could pronounce that correctly.
Ryan Reynolds made me laugh. He got a tweet, and then he got a vaccination and sent out a picture on Instagram that just said, I finally got my 5G working. He's really funny.
He is really funny. But got it. I called Shoppers on Sunday night and I just said, hey, I'm sorry to bug. I'm hearing it's 40 and over. Just want to know how I sign up. And the woman on the other line said, give me your name and number and we'll call you. And I was like, great. I'm sure you guys are super busy. And then they called me the next day and said, we can get you on Tuesday at 9:30. I'm like, sweet. All right, I got it done, and Amy was, she'll be in line, and shout out to Amanda, the pharmacist at Shoppers.
So how big was the needle?
It's normal. It's a normal needle. Okay. First off, it does not hurt. And as you know, Bob, I'm adverse to physical pain of any sort. Yep. And it was fine. Easy, easy peasy. The hardest part was the shirt I wore, it doesn't fully, like, I had to roll it up to the shoulder, and it didn't work. So I had to like take my arm out of the shirt. And so it was a weird look for me. That was the toughest part.
Do you have like the old school WWF Andre the Giant look where you've got the one strap unitard?
Yes. That's what it looked like. 100%.
Half your chest is exposed and the other half is covered.
Yes. Yes. Amanda got my left nipple, but not my right one.
Well, from what I understand, that's your good side.
My left nipple is the one that's messed up. It's like a lot of little nipples. My right nipple is just one solid nipple. Hot nipple talk on the pod.
I was about to say, there are times when something leaves your mouth and you go, I regret what I said.
I'm waiting for that moment to hit me.
We all are. Well, I'm really happy that you got vaccinated and I'll be getting my shot soon too. And you know, the unbelievable mess that we find ourselves in right now is perhaps only the only good that can come of this right now is if it expedites the process and all of these groups from federal right on down. It's been slow and stagnant and it seems to be moving quickly now. I hope to be vaccinated soon myself. Good on you, Maddie. Good on you.
Yeah, well, and like I was debating it because, you know, I work from home. I don't need to be in front of people. I don't need to be on public transportation. I am fairly safe. But when I was talking to Amanda and, you know, about it, she's like, no, we just want to get as many needles into as many people out there. So I'm like, okay, I'll come, because I did have a moment of, no, give it to someone else. I can certainly wait, you know. I mean, like, it's more important for you because you've got a kid, you know, school and everything. So I was feeling a little bit hesitant, but when she explained it like that, I'm like, okay, I'll go get the shot.
Well, good for you, bud. Yeah. You know what amazes me now is when COVID first broke and there was just projections as to how long it might take to get a vaccine. Some people were saying 3 or 4 years. Can you imagine, with everything that we've experienced in the last year, if we were 1/3 of the way there?
Jeez, no, I can't. That would be nuts. I can't imagine that at all. But think about like what we've learned. Like a year ago, it was don't worry about a mask, save them for nurses, and don't touch anything. And we're gonna put police tape around playgrounds. Now we're kind of still doing that on the third one. Thanks, thanks, Doug. But the other ones, we've learned. That's what science is. You learn, you trial and error, and you get better.
I haven't studied the budget, obviously, the federal budget that came out. I know that there's been some conservative pushback saying there's not enough allocated for public health and future safeguarding against these kinds of things. I don't know. I'm not saying like this is my opinion. I will say when the conservatives are saying we don't have enough public health measures for future considerations, it's probably something worth looking at. If we've learned anything, and we probably haven't, but if we've learned anything, it's that don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today. All this stuff is out there. It's all there. Let's not, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yes, absolutely. And also, how about not give the police the power to randomly check what you're doing on the street? How about that one as well?
Matt, I'm actually going to voluntarily pull the plug on any politics talk. Mm-hmm. Jeff Pollock and I got into, we were texting each other back and forth on Saturday morning. Mm. And it was interesting because it was never tense, but we both had our opinions. Yep. And he's a conservative. He's very conservative. He's running for the Conservative Party. I can't remember the riding off the top of my head, but it's here in Toronto. And, yep. We eventually did come to a common ground. Usually when both parties have kids, you can find common ground because you just start talking about the cute things your kids do.
Yeah.
What it went to show me was I don't know how easy it's going to be to find common ground amongst all these people who are upset at each other and for good reasons, but we have to. So there you go.
Okay, Bob. Then I'm just going to say this about your conversation, because now I'm angry. You had a text conversation. You know how long sometimes you take between answering my texts, and you're going back and forth with Jeff Pollock? Shame on you.
Tell me that you think I've been too hard on Doug Ford. I'll get right back to you.
By the way, our lawyer is Jeff Pollock. If you need a lawyer, or he's our sponsor, and he's our lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. The phone number, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. And here's how, good a guy he is. Him and Bob can have different opinions, and they still find some sort of common ground, although, of course, mostly it's a cheat common ground. It's on the children. But you want to move on to my big question for the day?
Yeah, sure. I feel like likability will play into this.
Yeah. So last night was everyone had the night off as a Toronto sports fan. There's no Jays, no Leafs, no Raptors. So I just went full in and watched all these great basketball games. And Steph Curry, 49 points, 10 three-pointers, just an incredible night, an incredible season where he has no help around him. And it got me thinking, what athlete has a higher approval rating than Steph Curry? Like, you could throw all, like, you've got to have a guy that doesn't have many warts, has had trouble with the law, no bad tweets, has done plenty of winning. You put it all together, I don't know of anyone that can beat Steph Curry.
I'm going to add one more layer to that.
Sure.
Has done a lot of winning, but also has to be uniquely talented. Not even necessarily excellent, but uniquely talented. There has to be something exemplary about how they play. Like, Steph's got the shooting, and, he's obviously a great player, but he's in the conversation for the best ever at his particular skill. So, maybe it's not important that factors in, but it's certainly a plus. I have one thought, somebody who's as popular worldwide, mm-hmm. and that's Lionel Messi. People yeah. love him. He's probably the greatest midfielder ever, certainly in the consideration. He's stayed mostly out of trouble, to the best of my knowledge. I think he's had some beef with the team lately, but there's been talk about him moving maybe even to Manchester City. But generally speaking, he's been a one club guy, messy. And other than that, I'm kind of hard pressed to think of anyone.
And for me, I did mine as just North American. And so like I was thinking about hockey and the name that would come to mind would be Sidney Crosby. But I'm like, well, there's a lot of people that don't like him. He's sneaky, dirty, a lot of groin injuries, whacking guys with his stick on their whacking his stick on guys' on their wrists. So I actually had Ovechkin maybe slightly higher than Crosby because Ovechkin feels more like us. Like we see him out partying. There's nothing about Crosby that feels like he's out there for a good time and Ovechkin won the cup. And my only negative with Ovechkin is his allegiance with Putin, which will turn off some people.
If it was the financial world, then Crosby would be a really good mutual fund and Ovechkin mm-hmm. would be day trading.
Yeah.
You know, Ovechkin's GameStop. He's the GameStop of hockey. You just like he's a wild ride and it's exciting. You know, you remember him on the Segway back in the days having fun and, you know, he played like a battering ram and, you know, he might be the single greatest goal scorer in the history of the game. You know, it's funny how people turned on Ovi. It's not that they necessarily started to dislike him, but it's people have gone out of their way to prove he can't be the best guy in the game. It's like important to people that Ovechkin isn't seen as greater than Crosby or anybody else of his generation. I'm not exactly sure why.
Well, it's funny. I feel now that people are now rooting for him to at least get close to breaking Gretzky's goal record. I think the older he gets, the more salt that gets in that hair, the more we are amazed every time he scores. I feel that people are now starting to cheer for it because we all love cheering for history when we get to be a part of it.
Now, obviously, the goal total is not anywhere close to the points total. They're in just separate categories.
No one's getting points total. It's happening.
And what Gretzky did is so incredible, even with the comparison of eras, it's just untouchable. That said, though, it's so much harder to score goals now. Matt, you've seen the old NHL games where, you know, there's no ads on the rink boards and the goalies have a beer in their hand and their pads are made of bubble wrap. It's, you know, like games were routinely 6-5. I'm not saying that to denigrate Gretzky or any of the goal scorers of that era. They were doing the best they could with what they had. But it ain't like that now. I don't know the right fact. There's got to be some analytic comp thing going on where you could, like, how many goals would he have in the 80s? 1,400?
Well, maybe 1,200 a season, you know, around that.
Yeah, a season. I was going total, but you're right, a season.
Yeah, well, no, and it's not to denigrate. It's about putting it in context. It was easier to score goals back then. The other side would be, well, players are more pampered, are kept in better shape. You know, there's back and forth on it. You could hit a guy harder then than you can now. But I think a lot of people would agree that Ovechkin is better at scoring goals than Gretzky, but Gretzky's the better player. I don't think that's a hot take.
No, because Gretzky is the single Gretzky or Lemieux, I guess. How divide it up any way you want. You ready for my catty remark? And I don't mean this as a cheap shot against Jeff O'Neill, whom I love. It's just it's so there. Mm-hmm. Goalies today look like Jeff O'Neill when he played. Goalies then look like Jeff O'Neill now.
Yeah, that wasn't a shot at all at Jeff O'Neill.
Well, I'm just saying, as athletes, yeah, it's a bit of a shot. You know, he laughs at himself though. I saw him. They had the Overdrive show on TV, and I was watching him do sprints the 40 against some guy named Al's brother.
Yes. Yeah,
it was really funny. They had a whole combine. It was very funny.
Oh yeah, and I, by the way, credit to O'Neill for allowing it and for allowing it to go on and being the butt of the joke, which he never minds being. At the same time, you scored more than 40 goals and you're losing in the 40 to Al's brother. Shame on you, Jeff.
I don't even know if you know this, Matt, but did you know that when they split up Cebulski and I, mm-hmm. and Cebulski was let go and they planned to put me to 9 a.m., did you know that Jeff O'Neill was who they originally pitched me as my radio partner?
Really? No, I didn't know that.
Totally. The program director at the time, Rob Gray, called me up and said he really loved O'Neill and he was looking for opportunities to get him more time at the station. And would I consider having him as my co-host? And I remember Jeff called me at home And we talked about it. We both agreed we liked each other just fine, but we weren't sure how that was going to work. And I had my eye on you. I wanted to work with you because I thought it could be really great. And you have a car. So that we were almost Macko and O-Dog. But we turned up being Macko and Kaz. And history has shown bad decision by me.
Well, except for the fact that if it was you and O'Neill, you would have been spending a lot of money on cabs.
Well, I'd still have a job. So that maybe it would all even out.
Yeah, who knows? Ooh, God, that is a crazy sliding doors, what if sort of situation.
Matt, one of the great joys of my life was the show that we did together. And anytime we had O'Neill on, it was fun. But he and I are... Him and Hayes are perfect for each other. Noodles, they have, radio is all about chemistry. And you just, it's not about talent. I mean, it is to a degree, but that final step, I guess like any great team, you know, there's the one you have on paper and then there's the one that you actually play with. And you and I on paper may not have made as much sense to the management as me and O'Neill because they thought, well, we got to get this guy some reps. But nobody ever thought it was a bad call. They loved the show. I'm sure in their hearts they still do. They just couldn't keep doing it for any reason.
Yeah. Trust me. It is still talked about in reverence. I still get asked all the time to do what they said, what they meant. And I'm like, I can't do that without Bob. The funny isn't there. And it's going to be forced and it's not going
to
work.
Let's go back to this Steph Curry thing. Did you throw this out on the radio today?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What did people say?
There was some for Crosby. There was a couple different players who have come back from cancer, some LeBron James, you know, a lot of names like that. We're getting the most thrown out there.
See, for me, LeBron James is more likable than let me take this back. There's a difference between likable and admirable. Mm-hmm. I think that Steph Curry is more likable than LeBron James, but James is more admirable than Curry. And that's not any knock against Steph. It's just that what LeBron James has done, it's like he's a combination of Jordan and Muhammad Ali. I don't know if we're ever going to see this again. I feel like we're not just witness to greatness on the court. Everything from building schools in Akron to the creation of a multimedia company that's probably going to be really successful. I don't know if we've ever seen this before. Doesn't mean he's as likable as Steph, though. Steph's got the one thing, Matt. He's got the one thing that most of these athletes can't ever have. He looks like us.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Like LeBron doesn't look like us. What you see Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid do on the ice, you're like, wait a minute, humans can't do that. And that puts sort of a barrier, which is a big reason why Steph is number one in terms of approval rating. And the only thing, and you're right, the admirable, LeBron is definitely more that. And LeBron's got two strikes on him. One was the decision. And two was everything in China when he backtracked, when he basically told Daryl Morey to shut up and dribble when Daryl Morey put the tweet out in support of in the support of Hong Kong. And, you know, and that is always going to leave sort of a sour mark when people think about LeBron James, which, by the way, I say that and I also agree with you. Incredibly admirable. And also to throw in what you said about LeBron was the more than a vote, doing what he could to help get more people vote. But if we're looking for number one on approval rating, you got to be pretty clean.
Steph is charming. He's got a couple signature goofy moves. Like he's got the thing with the mouthpiece where he's chomping on the mouthpiece when he takes free throws. And he's also got his warm up, and his warm up in itself has become legendary with him making shots from the out of bounds area. And that itself has become a YouTube sensation. There's nothing about this guy that isn't likable. I want to go back to something interesting you said, though. There were a lot of very good liberals who didn't seem like very good liberals around this China issue, whether it was Steve Kerr or Greg Popovich or LeBron James. There were a lot of guys who have been very vocal about North American issues who suddenly got less vocal when it came to China.
Yeah.
Are you getting less vocal now too, Matt? Are you freezing? Are you scared?
Oh, no. I'm not scared of anyone. My thing of it was I'm okay with Kerr or Popovich or anyone saying I'm going to comment on it when I do more research. My issue with LeBron was he came out and attacked Morey and said Morey didn't know what he was talking about. And he treated Daryl Morey the way who's the blonde Fox person, which I know narrows it down to 100 different ones. I think Laura Ingraham or whoever said LeBron should shut up and dribble, which was wildly incorrect by her. But LeBron kind of did that to Daryl Morey. That was my only issue with LeBron.
So when we talk about money and power, have you followed anything about the creation of a European Super League?
All over it. That is the best story.
Okay, so let's move from likability and money and power and politics.
Yeah.
And take it to Europe, where this is just, I mean, Boris Johnson says he's going to get involved and make sure this thing doesn't happen. Prime Minister of the UK is right on it.
Bob, I'm going to feel, you might not know, like, this was going on all throughout my show today. You're up at the cottage. I hope you don't know this. Just like I'm glad you didn't read the federal budget. If you're up at Huntsville and you're sitting there reading the budget, shame on you. But almost all these clubs have done a 180. Almost all the major clubs, like Manchester United, all of them have now said they're not joining the Super League. This is going to be dead. This is going to last less time than the XFL. It is a crazy story of where the fans all rose up and said, you're not doing it. And all these billionaires, they miscalculated. Boy, did they screw up.
Okay, so to me, this is the story of capitalism in a nutshell. You've got these incredibly powerful teams that make more money than just about anybody else in the entertainment world, but they're running their costs really high. So they figure they can band together and create their own thing. Technically, there's nothing wrong with that. They have every right to do it. It's not illegal. It's certainly, you know, it doesn't put the fan in a great position, but they were using their leverage, and they're probably still using their leverage to try and make more bucks. And that's at the heart of a lot of thinking. But where this is like capitalism is they were up against the institutions, the governmental power, the institutional powers like UEFA and FIFA. And, you know, they came out and quickly said, well, then you're not competing for your nations. You know, if you're going to screw us, we're going to screw you when it comes to national play. And of course, the fan gets hosed in the middle, because no matter what, nothing beats the World Cup. Actually, I wonder if that's true. I wonder if the English soccer fan would rather have a World Cup victory or have their team win in club play. I don't know. But regardless, that was the leverage we had back. So you had institutions versus private entities trying to use free market for leverage. It was capitalism, Matt, and governments won. I'm so happy. This is the best thing that's happened in my day. Governments never win.
Oh, well, you're right. But a lot of this was about the fan backlash. Like, fans of the teams leaving were like, we're not going to support you if you go and join the Super League. This situation was so messed up. FIFA, you felt bad for FIFA. They were the little guy getting stomped around. This is FIFA. They're as corrupt as it gets. And they suddenly became a sympathetic figure. How the hell do you do that?
Do you remember back when we were still on the air and we used to run clips from the Tim Roth movie about Sepp Blatter?
Yes.
It was during that huge scandal, like all the payola going on. I wish I could remember the name of that film. We actually wanted to have a screening of it. I think we were going to actually talk about having a movie night and renting the review cinema and showing that movie. God, what were we thinking back then? Why didn't we just talk hockey? It's so much easier.
We talked. No, it wasn't. Not back then. Some of those years of Macko and Kaz, it was Morgan Riley looked good helping set up P.A. Parenteau in the second period. Now, someone shoot me in the face.
Do you know what I found interesting about this story? I know the shoot in the face thing was a true thing. Yeah. You know what I found so interesting was the rise of streaming and just the rise of new media, because DAZN apparently was part of the negotiations to set up the Super League. Mm. And that would have put them on the map had it happened the way football put Fox on the map. Some new streaming service is eventually going to take over. I don't know which one it is, whether it's Netflix or Amazon or maybe a whole new party that doesn't exist yet.
I can stop you.
Amazon's got Thursday night. It's Amazon. They got Thursday night.
They're going to start there with Jacksonville versus the Jets. It's a modest with a Thursday nighter, but they'll work their way up from there.
Okay, so here's what do you think's more likely to happen first? That Amazon gets Sunday football games or that London gets its own football team?
I would... probably Amazon, only because I can't see the union being good with Jacksonville, because let's face it, it's the Jags leaving to go to London. I have a hard time seeing that happening. I'll pick. Ooh, that's close though. But yeah, I'll pick Amazon. They just Bezos buys NBC, and bang, there's the Sunday nighter.
So I'd like to talk some Leafs. We've avoided it categorically for about 27 minutes, mm-hmm. but the last game was the game against Vancouver, and people are pretty upset about it. It wasn't a great game. The Leafs probably should have won it, but for bad goaltending and some bad luck. But where do we rank losing to a Zamboni driver in net versus losing to a team that's just come off of 2.5 weeks of gut and soul wrenching COVID?
I go the Zamboni driver game, the David Ayers game, is still number one for me. Yeah. It's still number one because at the very least you can point to Braden Holtby. Now, I don't care that he stood on his head. It's still embarrassing. That's an embarrassing loss because of everything you just listed. But nothing is going to beat the vitriol that night had.
I agree with you. And it should be remembered more sourly. But it made me think, I don't know if this is true in other markets, but what is it with the Leafs and symbolic losses? Why does this team engage in symbolism so much? Can't it just go out and lose big normally?
I know. Like, of course, Vancouver's first game back wasn't against Ottawa. Of course, it was against Toronto. And it was a great gift for every hockey fan in the market, every hockey fan on planet Earth.
Now, I'm going to say it just because I have to, but I have not been convinced during this process that Jack Campbell's the guy. He was playing like he was the guy, but that did not convince me he was going to be the guy. Are people souring on him? I see it a little bit out there, but I feel like... Like, people almost don't want to embarrass themselves for how excited they were to now turn around and say, maybe he's not that good.
We're doing this subtle little thing. Instead of ripping Jack, we're wondering a little more, when's Freddie coming back? Or how's Dave Riddick looking? You know, we won't talk about Jack Campbell. How are the other ones doing?
Yeah. What's your take on that?
My take is you have to be concerned. Campbell's been great, but the last like 4 or 5 games, his save percentage is around .867. So it hasn't been great. He's had some really bad games. Those 2 goals by Horvat, those saves needed to be made. My level of concern is it's going a little bit higher. I'd say it's about a five or six out of ten right now. But it's constantly moving around and changing like a cat following a laser pointer. You know, if Riddick plays great tonight, it'll go down to a 4.
And Zach Hyman gets hurt. Have we heard a little bit of where he might be?
He's going to be out for 2 weeks. And that one doesn't worry me because Hyman, he doesn't need time to ramp back up. You can throw him out. He'll play the last regular season game, and then he'll be ready for the playoffs. And you can throw him on any line. It's not like a guy. It's not like he needs to get his timing back.
So I see that Sid Cicero puts out a tweet saying Zach Hyman is the most important Toronto Maple Leaf. And I chuckled to myself, and I thought, God, this guy's good at stirring the pot, isn't he? And I look down. I see there's like 1.4K responses. I'm thinking, has he even read all of them? I'm afraid to open that Pandora's box up to see what some of the responses to that tweet would be.
I could never do that because he's a good guy. I don't want to call him a liar, but there is a bit of intellectual dishonesty because here's the way to prove if he's the most important player. Let's say Zach Hyman was gone for the year, or let's say Austin Matthews was gone for the year. Which one's going to create more chaos and depression?
There's no question. There's no question. It does go to show, though, that Zach Hyman's stock has grown so incredibly high. I'm always amazed by which players get the think pieces and which ones don't. Nylander and Marner, to a certain extent, got think pieces, but Matthews didn't. And Riley sort of gets them, but Zach Hyman doesn't. Even though you could argue the future of Zach Hyman, and we've had this conversation, we both agreed, the future of Zach Hyman is probably more important than the Leafs. Than the future of Morgan Riley. But it's weird about how some players just get think pieces. What existential crisis are we going to solve with this guy? You know, versus the other ones where you're like, it's hockey, it's a negotiation.
Because Hyman's boring. He is I shouldn't say boring. He is a known commodity. We know who he is now. We know what he's going to look like on any of the lines. We know he puts a lot on the table. He doesn't take a lot off. He doesn't make the spectacular play, but he also doesn't make many mistakes. So he's just, he is roast chicken. And roast chicken is always good. You know what you're getting with it.
How's your roast chicken? Do you make a good one?
I save that for Amy. Amy's in charge of the roast chicken, and she does a good job.
Okay, so what's your dish?
You know, like the stereotypical answer would be the barbecue and like pasta and things like that. Beyond that, my dishes that I like to experiment with, it doesn't really work with Amy because it is more on the seafood side of things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't really eat fish. So I'm the one that experiments with different white fish right now.
I'm the roast chicken guy. I feel like mm-hmm. I make a good roast chicken. I'd like to make a good paella. I'd like to learn to make paella.
Ooh. Yes.
I love the food, and I need one dish that surprises people. Roast chicken's not going to surprise right. anybody. Like you say, I need something where, you know, we go visit our friend Trina and she makes paella, and well, she's a good cook, so it's not a surprise, but everybody sits around. It's like, oh my God, this is so fun. We love you, Trina. I want that dish. I want the We Love You, Bob dish where
yes.
you throw it a pan and everybody's like, oh, how did he do this? It's magical. Let's have a great time.
And then on top of that, what you want, Bob, is when it's Easter, Thanksgiving, someone's like, hey, Bob, are you going to bring the paella? You know, like you're a paella guy and they demand it. And you're like, well, I could try something else. I've been working on this thing with parsnips. And they're like, no, you're paella.
It's like when you're the band Men at Work. You want one dish to be your down under.
Yes.
And every time you play for the rest of your lives, people are going to call, play down under.
Yep.
That's what I need. I need people when I walk in the door to say, do you got any paella?
Well, to quote Homer Simpson, play taking care of business. We did. Play it again. But
and they start playing it. Get to the chorus. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that part. The thing about paella, I'm glad we're here now. If I was going to cook it, I wouldn't want anyone in the house with me because there's so much going on and I like to clean when I cook. And for me, I'm going to be doing 100 things at once. I don't want any other human being getting in the way of my momentum.
I admire you for cleaning while you cook. And I've seen other people do this. I could never do it. Well, I guess I technically could, but I have never done it. And mm-hmm. the episode looks like a pantry version of Hoarders. Like that's what my kitchen yeah. looks yeah. like after I've cooked. There's stuff everywhere. And God, does it take a long time to clean? I don't know why it takes so long to clean at the end as opposed to during. It must be the same amount of time. It's the same amount of cleaning.
Well, no, because some of the stuff now cakes on, gets stuck. If you clean it right away, everything cleans faster. A waiting for water to boil is an opportunity to clean even just one or two things. I feel such satisfaction if I'm eating the food at the right temperature and 85% of everything has been cleaned and some of it even put away.
All right, Cos, I've only got a few minutes left. I got to go to work yeah. soon. But what do you want to do here? Did you see the Shang-Chi trailer video?
I saw, yes, I did see it. Looks great.
Okay, quick conversation about it then. Trailer talk? I liked it. Sure. It looked good.
Yeah.
What did you like about it?
It reminded me of Kill Bill 2 when she's in the coffin and she's using her hitting the wood. I love him doing that, you know, just doing that part over and over again, plus the rags to riches sort of story. It had a lot of elements that you want to see.
Marvel missed an opportunity with the Iron Fist shows for Netflix because there's something just about a good martial arts tale. It gets into territory that's different than all the other superhero-y type stuff. There's mysticism and ancient knowledge. There's always like a quasi-spiritual aspect to it, which is true of martial arts generally. I'm really excited to see what Simu Liu can do with the role. He looks great. God, his body looks like it's gone through an incredible makeover, as you would expect. Awkwafina looks really funny.
Yep, always is.
You know, she's been good in so many things. I'm really excited. My fingers are crossed that it doesn't devolve into cliche. It's always a tricky thing with these stories because you want to draw upon the strengths of the genre. You don't want to just simply duplicate what people have done before.
I'm not as worried about cliche because I think we're all more sensitive about it and just smarter. In fact, what I'd like to see is for like if there's going to be the super spiritual person, Make it someone with a Southern accent who's a big fan of Nick Saban. Really go for some stunt casting out there. And as for Awkwafina, I feel she's got a Melissa McCarthy 3-year run in her where she just puts out like 4 incredible funny movies.
Have you seen Nora from Queens?
No.
It's really good. She's really good. I haven't seen Crazy Rich Asians yet. I don't know that I ever will, but apparently she's very good in that. I haven't seen it. To tell you the truth, I don't know anything about that movie. It just, you know, it feels like an airplane movie, and I haven't been on a plane in a long time.
Yeah, that's true. It does feel like an airplane movie. Right now, I'm just trying to bang out all the Oscar movies between now and Sunday.
What have you seen that's good?
Nomadland. I saw that. Tonight, I'm going to watch Sound of Metal.
I heard that's awesome.
Yeah, so tonight is Sound of Metal night.
And will you be celebrating the Oscars this Sunday?
I will be. It'll be a little more tame just because, you know, COVID. But I'll absolutely be watching it.
We'll watch it too. It's sad that, you know, it's sad that we had a year where we just couldn't really go out and see these movies in the theater. You know, there's been some really great theaters that have shut down in LA, some great chains. As soon as we can, there are 3 things that I want to do. I want to eat in public. I want to see a movie in a theater and
go to a ball game.
Well, even more than that, I want to go to live music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are my big 3. I can kind of live without live sports for now.
I want to go to Mandarin. I feel when it's safe to go to Mandarin, we're back to normal, baby.
I'm wearing track pants now. I could go right from here. All right.
Hi, Matt, Bob.
I better run, but here, team me up again.
Okay, let's do that again, because that track pants line is where we should have ended it. Bob, right. I just want to go back. I want to go back to Mandarin. That means we're back to normal.
I'm wearing track pants now. I could go right from here.
Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.